welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 246 of the podcast. And it is 6th of December, 2015, as I record this in the scary run-up to Christmas, as everybody's running around like crazy people buying presents. And in fact, I just had my first family Christmas lunch this last weekend. It seems a little early, but there you go. So today I have an interview with Dan Wood from DraftDigital.com. who, like me, is very positive about the future of global digital sales. And I think you'll really enjoy this interview at whatever stage you are at in the journey. And actually, I've got a lot of publishing news today. First up, I was at the Bookseller Author Day last Monday in London and used the hashtag #AuthorDay on Twitter, which amusingly got hijacked by authors all over the world celebrating a random day, which was cool. And it kind of became a much bigger thing on Twitter than it was locally. And what was so interesting about the day is I really just felt completely in a separate place. I actually felt that the traditional publishing industry is a sort of, it exists in a parallel reality to the one that we live in now. The way they were talking, I didn't recognize some of the things that people were saying to me, and a lot of them didn't recognize the things that we were saying about them. And it is just increasingly a sort of parallel industry. And the term shadow industry was originally coined, I think, by Joe Comrath a while back, because of the huge numbers of indie books that don't have ISBNs and therefore aren't counted in the media figures on ebooks. So if you hear the stories that say ebook sales are down and ebooks sales are dropping and print is winning, that's mainly because a lot of the ebooks are not even being counted in the industry statistics. Now, I also like the phrase, some people object to the phrase shadow industry, but obviously you guys know me well enough now that I like the term shadow. Maybe because I did too much Jungian psychology, but to me, the shadow implies subversive and deviant and original and being on the edge of the mainstream, which I personally celebrate as an indie. I don't want to be in the middle of the road in the bright lights. I want us to do things that raise eyebrows and cause a ruckus and are considered dangerous by the mainstream and threaten the status quo. I feel that is what we should want to do. And so I like the shadow industry. So there you go. And, you know, being independent means we can do things that others who are being paid by the industry can't do. And, you know, I was kind of sitting there looking at many of the speakers who are being paid salaries by big corporates. And at the end of the day, I'm paid based on readers buying my books, based on you guys buying products, based on people wanting what I personally have to sell. And that means I am truly independent. And, you know, that's quite exciting. But it does mean we will always have a different viewpoint to someone who is paid a salary by a corporation and they have to protect that salary. So, yeah, it was a really interesting day. And also, coincidentally, AuthorEarnings.com released their report about sales on Amazon.co.uk. And there are some really interesting things in that. You can go to AuthorEarnings.com for their November 2015 report on Amazon.co.uk. The UK is currently the world's second largest market for digital books. And although the UK ebook market is less than a fifth of the size of the US, Amazon.co.uk still sells more ebooks than any of the non-Amazon US retailers do in the US. So essentially, Amazon.co.uk is the second largest retailer of English language ebooks in the world. So if you are not paying attention to your sales on Amazon.co.uk, you should be. And one of the things that Dan Wood and I talk about in this is in specific pricing per market. And in the UK, ebooks are lower priced, and they also should be ending in $49 or $99. So if you're selling a book in the US for $4.99, it should probably be £2.99, not £3.14, which is what it might show up as on Amazon. So really considering your local pricing is so important. Of course, the UK does have a 20% VAT charge, and everyone made a fuss about that this year, but you don't notice that as you price on Amazon and the other stores, including VAT. It just means that your royalty's less, but you know, that's just life. Tax is part of life, people. The other thing, as I mentioned about that shadow industry, is that the report showed that 25% of ebooks sold on Amazon.co.uk do not have ISBNs. And in the US, that is around 37% now. So one out of every four ebooks purchased by UK consumers is an untracked ebook without an ISBN. Nearly £1 out of every £6 spent in the UK on ebooks is currently going to untracked ebooks without ISBNs. And yes, that includes me. I still don't use ISBNs on my ebooks, and I use free CreateSpace ISBNs for my print books. The other interesting thing, ebooks by indie authors make up more than 26% of all ebooks sold on Amazon.co.uk, although that's smaller than 38% of ebooks sold on Amazon.com. So really interesting to consider that the UK market is still behind the US, even though it's probably the second most mature ebook market, followed by Canada, Australia, Germany, but Germany's kind of tiny compared to everything else. So again, remember that we are just at the beginning of this revolution as such. And although you might feel you've heard it all before, we are still the vanguard of this movement. Mark Coker from Smashwords also released survey results this week. And again, I'll link to those in the show notes. But really interesting. And again, it sort of backed up what Dan Wood and I talk about in this show, the importance of pre-orders. And as I mentioned last week, I am definitely getting into assetless pre-orders for my own books in 2016. I am entirely convinced now of the efficacy of it. And I'm getting into it despite my fear of putting up dates on my own creativity. I'm a businesswoman, I shouldn't be concerned by it. Yeah, I don't like it, but I'm going to do it. And hopefully that will be good. And for stores like iBooks and Kobo, it's actually increasingly important to do this type of pre-order. And also Mark's study showed that free still works, and series with free starter books earn more money. And I mean, I see this with my Arcane series, and I'm definitely still considering putting the first book in my London Psychic crime trilogy free, Desecration. But it's one of those, I'm so proud of that book. Like it's a book I'm incredibly attached to, and the thought of making it free is kind of, ooh, I know you all know what I feel in that way. I'm probably still too close to it to make it free. I feel with Stone of Fire, I'm far enough away from that now, by book 8 in the Arcane series that I can do it. Anyway, it's funny facing this fear after years and knowing intellectually what is a good idea versus being able to actually change the price to free. But watch this space. I might make it by next week. Also, Mark found that longer books sell better than shorter books. I do get some comments about my novellas being too short, but I still like novellas and I like writing them. I like reading them, so I'm going to carry on writing them, but also continue with full length. And there's some information about best-selling genres and things. So really interesting. So check out author earnings and also the Smashwords 2015 survey. Again, on publishing stuff, I am last call for the webinar I'm doing with Nick Stevenson. This week will be on Thursday, 10th of December at 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. London. And if you register, you will get the recording. So if you are listening to this before Thursday, 10th of December, 2015, you can still register thecreativepen.com/10kwebinar2. Number 10, so 10K webinar number 2, 10K webinar 2. And again, I'll link to that in the show notes. Okay, so here's what you have sent me this week. Randy Tramp says, I find great encouragement in your podcasts. I listen to them when I'm at the gym on the elliptical. Hi, Randy. And of course, Honoré is always at the gym. Hi, Honoré. Probably on the elliptical too. Lex Duncan says, it's always a good day when the Creative Pen updates with a new podcast. Gonna listen between classes. Fantastic. Ian Wingrove. Oh, this was lovely. Ian tweeted me. He said, thank you for the inspiring talk, The Guardian Masterclass. 2 years later, my book published today. Really happy with that, Ian. And I am always so pleased to hear from people that who have taken action after I speak. I used to speak a lot more. I'm speaking less these days, but I really, really love to hear when I've actually helped put another book in the world. It really makes my day. Lakshmi says, doing a Creative Pen podcast binge weekend. Super stuff, Lakshmi. Icy Sedgwick says, I listen to your podcast while editing personal statements for my students who are going through the UCAS process. I'd rather be writing. I see you're doing a great job there, really helping people. Barry Pearman, listening while discovering I'm at last one of the cool kids at school, hanging with the bros. And there's a really lovely picture of Barry, who is a more mature gentleman, hanging with the Māori or Pacific Island kids in an Auckland school. Really cool picture, Barry. And of course, Risen Gods is out, which is my tribute to the bros. Scott A. Coombs sent me a really lovely picture of him with his green parrot, Maxine, on his shoulder. Really enjoyed that picture, Scott. Thank you for that. Leah Stella Stevens, oh, this was hilarious, says, I'm delivering packets of blood to hospitals while listening to your podcast, and sent a picture of lots of scary packets of blood. But of course, they're not scary. They're saving lives. Thanks, Leah. Shannon Kelly, just discovered you here on Cape Cod, listening to your back podcast while driving to the day job. You're giving me hope. Thanks, Shannon. And it's so funny because, of course, last episode I had Yarrow Starak on the show and I used to listen to him while driving to my day job and he gave me hope. So I am so pleased when I can give you hope about a creative future because people gave me that beforehand, which is why I like to pay it forward. David Cudd, proof of my first kid's picture book, thanks to the enlightenment of the Creative Pen podcast. Thank you, David, and congratulations on your first book. And Brittany Fichter, doing laundry and making trouble while listening to your show. Lovely picture of little baby there doing the laundry. Fantastic. So always great to hear from you. And you can always tweet me at The Creative Pen or email joanna@thecreativepen.com. Okay, so today's podcast episode is sponsored by 99 Designs, and you can go to 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A, for your free power pack upgrade worth $99, which gives you 130% more designs. So of course, 99 Designs does loads of different design work, web page design, social media banners, headers, postcards, flyers, email newsletter templates, t-shirts, mugs, but is most famous amongst the author community for book cover design. Now, I can't emphasize this enough. If you design your own book cover, you are missing out on what is probably the most important marketing tool you have. I mean, seriously, a good book cover can make all the difference. Of course, your content is still the same, but if readers don't get to the content, then, you know, they'll never know how good it is. And a book cover can be the quickest way to convince somebody to try your work. And I was reminded of this week. One of my Creative Freedom course members did a redesign of her nonfiction book, and it really was a stunning difference. You may think that a cover you design is good enough, but if you get a professional cover, you will just see how much it will lift your book. And it reminded me of my own first attempt way back in 2008 when I had a basically designed my own cover on PowerPoint, and it was awful. So having great company, but of course I didn't think it was awful at the time. I actually thought it was all right, but that's because I wasn't really looking at the competition. So have a look at the top 100 books that are selling in your genre, and then make a decision as to whether you want to invest in book cover design. And if you go to 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A, you will get the free power pack upgrade, which will enable you to get more designs on your work. And of course, you can get other things. This week, I blogged about getting a custom illustration for the map in Risen Gods. There's a lovely map of New Zealand to go with the story, which we're really happy with. So lots and lots of things that you can get design work done on 99designs.com/Joanna. Right, well, this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks especially to new patrons, Natalie Borelli and Vanessa Kia. I really do appreciate the Patreon support, like your tweets and emails. It really demonstrates that you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And on Patreon, you can support with just a few dollars, even just a dollar a show, to a maximum of 2 shows a month. So, and of course, you'll get the extra monthly Q&A show if you join Patreon. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Thank you, and let's get on with the interview with Dan. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Dan Wood. Hi Dan.
Hi Joanna, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. So just a little introduction, Dan is the Director of Operations and Publisher Relations at drafttodigital.com, which is very exciting. And Dan, just start by telling us a bit more about you and why you're personally so passionate about books and authors.
Well, I kind of came at it from, I was lucky to have a family that was really into reading. And my mom read to me every day when I was a child. And my grandmother would take me to the library, you know, every week for like a reading time. And so it kind of made me love books. But I think what really got me passionate about books was my mom's employer would have us over to her house, and she kept a library of books for children. So when I went over there, I got to pick out a book and keep it. And so she introduced me to the Hardy Boys.
Oh, I love the Hardy Boys. The mystery books.
And I love them. And that just got me reading that whole series. And there were so many of them at that point. Years later, I was devastated when I found out that Franklin W. Dixon wasn't a real person, but a, you know, just a long list of ghost writers. So,
yeah, Nancy Drew was the same.
Exactly. Yeah. So that really got me loving books. I went to high school with Aaron Pogue, who is one of our founders and the president of our company. And he has always wanted to be an author for as long as I've known him. And so I got to be alongside him as he got dozens of rejections sending to traditional publishing back in the 2000s. And then around 2008, when self-publishing really started being a viable thing, got to see him get passionate about that. And that kind of led to some of the ideas that made Draft Digital.
Oh, that's great to hear. And yeah, the Hardy Boys had a big influence on me. I actually preferred the Hardy Boys to Nancy Drew. Definitely yeah. More fun. They were all the ones with so-and-so adventure, when they like sea adventure and jungle adventure.
And then great covers. Like I remember the covers always had these two boys and they were like looking at some skull or something awesome, treasure maps. Amazing.
Yeah, exactly. No, that influence is totally in my books. And Wilbur Smith, you know, later on and that type of thing. But anyway, we should, we digress. So that's just for anybody who doesn't know, anyone who is probably, you know, either just starting out or perhaps is not aware, what is Draft Digital and what does it offer authors?
Well, Draft Digital is a set of tools that will help you publish your book. So we've got a Word document converter. So if you've read or, you know, written your book in Word, but you don't have all the different files you need, like an EPUB and a Mobi, to publish in the different stores, we can do that conversion for you. We're very proud of our converter because we've made it really robust, so we don't need to have a style guide. My earphone keeps falling out. you know, we can make these beautiful EPUBs and we provide all those file types. You know, even though we don't distribute to Amazon, we provide a movie file. We provide a PDF file if you want to use us to upload your book to CreateSpace, for instance. So we're able to convert all those files over. We also make it easy to manage your catalog. So I think what authors find is time is really their most valuable resource. And so we try to make a bunch of tools that help you save time. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about it a little bit later, but like the InMatter, automated InMatter we do, and making that a one button solution to update all of your old catalog to let people know I've got this new book in my series is a really powerful feature. And just, you know, we do these constant checks and audits of our distributors to make sure books are live, they're supposed to be live. Books are down, they're supposed to be down. Books are at the right price. And so all those tools together just make authors' lives a lot simpler. And, you know, rather than going to 20 different websites and uploading your content, uploading your tax information, we wanted to make it very, very simple.
And so we've had Mark Coker on the show, and, you know, of course, there are reasons to go with Smashwords versus Drafter Digital, and some people do both, but as you say, it's all about kind of saving time. So what would be the, you know, the comparisons with Smashwords? Because I know people are listening going, yeah, okay, you know, but they can't really tell the difference in their minds.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Mark has been a trailblazer for self-publishers, and, you know, Smashwords has been around for a very long time, and it's opened up a lot of new avenues. A lot of times, we're very similar. You know, it's a very similar business model. Our document conversion is where a lot of people say we differ heavily from Smashwords, and just a little bit quicker process. You know, a lot of authors enjoy that we do monthly payments as opposed to quarterly. A lot of times when people tell me they've completely switched over, it's because of that. You know, we do believe in you can use both us and Smashwords. Our whole system is opt-in for every channel. And so we have a lot of people who do use both. We would love to distribute to the Smashwords store because there's a lot of readers that, you know, take advantage of that. And so very, very similar. We just try to make it very, very fast. We do the monthly payments. We pay in direct deposit and PayPal, which I don't think Smashwords does direct deposit at this point. We also do, you know, some different stores. And so, you know, they have some that we don't offer and we have some that they don't offer.
What are your criteria around which stores to distribute to? Because it just, you know, right, I mean, given the website I have, I get pitched every day from a new distributor or a new store. Like, yes. I have to reply now and just say, look, I'm sorry, I just can't look at another store or another new platform. So how do you decide when is a, I mean, obviously there's, you have Nook and you have Scribd and you have, you know, some other ones, but I know you've got some stores now that people might not have heard of. So why do you choose different distributors and how can we tell which ones are worth publishing on?
Yeah. We do a lot of, you know, I follow all the industry newsletters and, you know, try to find, you know, who is being mentioned in Publishers Weekly, who is making deals with the big, the big five. You know, that gives me some idea that they're legit. We have a number of technical requirements that really end up, you know, if they can't meet certain speeds, you know, everyone has to be able to react to the same speed that Amazon publishes, because if they don't, Amazon, you know, does not like it if a price change takes a week at another competitor, or if you know, we need to delist a book so someone can go into select, they have to be able to delist it within 48 hours more or less. And so we do those things. I personally, you know, I talk to nearly each and every one of the people who pitch a different store to us to get a feel for their overall strategy. You know, we've been looking for companies, especially right now as we focus on international, who are partnering with telephone companies. You know, like 24 Symbols, I think the thing I'm most excited about that relationship is that's where they're planning to get their growth is making those partnerships where people can pay for a subscription service for ebooks through their phone bill.
Wow. Okay, that's a big deal. So tell us, you know, some more about 24 Symbols, because I think you mentioned it was a Spanish site, but is it Spanish language or is it kind of everything?
It's a little bit of everything. They are based out of Spain, I think Madrid, but I'm not positive about that. But their largest market really is South America. They are aiming at Spanish language content, but they've also expanded recently into Germany and into the US. And so they were looking for all kinds of content. You know, a lot of nearly everywhere else in the world, English is very commonly spoken. So they wanted the English language content because there are a lot of people who read in English, even though it's their second or third language. So that was also going with Tolino. One of the big things was they knew there's a ton of Germans that speak English. And so they wanted to have some English language content to be more competitive with KDP in Germany for those English readers.
And talking about Tolino, so for people who don't know, Tolino's, has it got a bigger market share now than Kindle in Germany? It's certainly 50%, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really hard to say. You know, I see varying reports that say, yes, it's bigger. You know, last year they're claiming to be about equal size. They do say that they are bigger in Germany and that Central Europe area than Amazon at this point. You know, Tolino is not like a, there's not like a Tolino website, but it's an alliance of a whole bunch of German booksellers that have been, you know, traditional print sellers and have been in the market and well known for forever. So been like if Barnes & Noble and Borders had got together and Books A Million and made a store instead of, you know, just competing on their own individual sites. One of those stores, they have the Tolino device, which is, the Tolino is like their Kindle. But all of those books, regardless of store, will work on that device and on the Tolino app. So,
yeah, and this is the thing. I mean, people listening may not have heard of, I hadn't heard of 24 Symbols until I got an email from you about that, and that's exciting. I'd heard of the Tolino, obviously, but this is, to me, why the international side is important, because Amazon doesn't own all the world. I think that people in America particularly consider that because they only see Kindle, really, don't they? I mean, even the Nook, well, we'll talk about Nook in a minute, but, you know, can you maybe talk about your opinion of this global shift and, you know, anything you see that's exciting?
You know, we've really focused on international this last year. You had Thad McElroy on the show a few months ago, and I think Porter Anderson might have turned me on to his website and all of his blog posts, but you know, he's a brilliant guy and really convinced me how much opportunity there is internationally, especially just for English language content. You know, I think translations will be important too, but just to get your books available everywhere is such a huge opportunity. You know, we believe that, you know, those markets haven't taken off. Most other than the US and the UK, you know, most of the other markets are under 10% for ebook adoption. However, we know that's going to change. You know, as with all new technology, convenience and speed and price always win, and ebooks are going to win on every count with that. And so, you know, beforehand, you know, not a lot of books crossed the oceans, you know, because it was very expensive logistically. Well, now with ebooks, that's not the case. And so, with I think Amazon has about 11 branded stores for countries. You know, Apple has 51 territories. Google Play has somewhere around that, like 51 or 52. Kobo, of course, adopted the strategy years ago. So they're at like 190 different countries or territories they deliver to. And so we're very excited about that. We're pursuing those markets and being there and having a solid foundation for when global markets really take off. We think mobile is going to be the trigger for that. You know, people are reading more and more on their phones. The Wall Street Journal recently had a great article about that. It's especially the case in foreign countries where they might not have internet access in the way we do, except for their phone, or you know, the extra income to go out and buy an e-reading device just for reading.
Yeah, I'm a total convert on this, and I'm just trying to get everybody else on board. And I think I'm excited now because it seems like people are getting on board with international. And I mean, if we just wind back 5 years, you know, I think the 5 year thing, in 5 years' time, people should be making, I mean, when you think about the population of the world and, you know, like you say, the growth in mobile, the growth in digital globally, we should technically be making more money from global sales than from US sales.
Yes.
You know, people should be going from making 90% of their income from Americans to making only maybe 10%, 15%. I mean, that's, to me, that's how it should look according to the global population. I mean, do you agree with that?
I do. You know, when I started doing the research, because I had a chance to speak at BEA and RWA about international markets. 2014, we sold about 69% of our books in the US, and the rest of 31 was the rest of the world. Australia was our second biggest market, especially US romance does so well in Australia. We also, Canada and UK were the second and third, respectively. This year, the numbers are just about the same. You know, we're hoping to increase that. Barnes & Noble has pulled back a little bit from international. So we think there are reasons why it's staying stable right now. But, you know, I hear over and over from authors, they wish they had been there in Kindle right when it really took off around 2010 to 2012. You know, right now they have that chance to be there at the ground floor with international markets. Mm-hmm. I think since Apple added iBooks to their as a default application to all of the Apple devices, they have 1 billion reading devices out there, and they're the second biggest ebook distributor right now.
I read on my iPhone. I have a Kindle that I read in bed, and then I read on my phone. So, and isn't it the most popular phone in China as well? I think
yes, yeah. So it's done extremely well in China, and that drove most of their growth last year.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, getting ebooks into China right now is difficult, but these things will only continue to open up. I think people forget, like people, like you said, authors going, oh, I wish I was there in 2010. Like, we haven't even started yet. I really feel that. We are barely, I mean, look at the crappy formats we still have. I mean, you know, we're nowhere really, are we? We're kind of in the cranky printing press days of ebooks.
You know, and traditional media keeps talking about how, it's kind of all stabled out. It's fine. It's fine. But it's not. Like, print is losing market share to digital. It's just really hard to measure the market right now because of, you know, the ISBN problems. You know, we're going to need new technologies and new people really wanting to answer the question of how big the book market is right now.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And okay, so a couple of things that you said there. You mentioned the subscriptions.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you about Oyster because you distribute to Oyster, which has been bought by Google Books. So what do you think is happening with Google and what's happening with Oyster?
You know, Google is so interesting. You know, we've been talking with them a long time. One of the big holdups to working with Google has been they've tried to compete on price with Amazon, and so they have a discounting policy. Which is just something we couldn't make work with Amazon's policies. It would just be a nightmare for authors. We had a great relationship with Oyster's staff. They have told us they're going to go in to Google and talk to them about, you know, we hope they will champion the cause for indie authors because, you know, right now Google is still closed, the Google Play Store, to new accounts and new authors. We have a very, very robust rights audit and quality audit that we do. That's, you know, we've automated it with algorithms to make sure we're getting our eyes on every book that we need to and making sure books that don't have issues are going through fairly quickly. We think we'd be great to work with Google Play. You know, we can solve some of the problems they have with, they had some issues with piracy, I believe, was why they closed. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's the one store that I haven't done because of all of those reasons. And I did try going direct like a year or so ago, and it was really hard. Like their back end was just ridiculous, and it just
that's what I hear.
Yeah, it just became oh dear, I can't do this. So yeah, I think everyone's holding it. I mean, you know, when you think about the phones again, you know, thinking about how the phones will work. Apple obviously has the phone. I mean, it's interesting with Kobo. I mean, because I have actually sold books in 68. Countries through Kobo, which I love. I mean, that's
awesome. Brilliant.
And those are mobile. I mean, most of those are mobile, you know, many of those Asia, Sub-Saharan Africa, South America. So they're obviously an app on a phone, but Kobo don't have their own phone, whereas Apple have their own phone and Google have their own phone. And what do you think about Facebook? Because Facebook's going to have their own phones. They're going to have their own browser. They've just kind of expanded their notes feature. Do you think Facebook will do publishing?
They could, and they could be so competitive in it. You know, they're looking right now at the news space. I wouldn't be surprised to see them do something with it. You just never know. And they have so much data on what people like already. They could be a very game-changing platform.
Yeah, I've had this chat with a few people, and I'm still picking it. Like, you know, especially with Zuckerberg's like year of books and you know, paying attention to books. Like, he's obviously a reedy, geeky guy, and his company is full of people who read. So I think that will be really interesting. So let's talk about Nook because, like, Nook upsets me because they pulled out of international sales, and actually, because I'm still having problems with Nook formatting, Nook Press is terrible. So I always recommend people do use Draft to Digital or Smashwords to get to Nook. And then they pulled out of international sales. And that, to me, is a big deal. I mean, it's very hard to even buy a Nook in England. And England is the UK is their only other market other than the US now. They pulled out of everywhere else. So what is your personal opinion, obviously not the company opinion, of what's going on with Nook?
You know, we've heard and we've seen the numbers that digital sales are going down at Nook. As a company, though, we've actually grown. We think part of it is the new agency pricing and all of the big five raising their prices so much. Indie authors, though, are still very competitive at price. I'm sad that they moved out of those international markets, but they are kind of renewed focus on the markets where they're still strong. They didn't have, with all their international market stuff, they had never really dedicated the resources I think they needed to it. So it wasn't that big of a loss anyway. You know, they had worked really hard in the US and UK. So we'll see. You know, they went through that period where they were trying to spin off the Nook division and sell it to another company. They decided not to do that. And so we're seeing a little bit more renewed focus. You know, there's a big difference between if you think your company's about to be sold off and what you're doing and what you're doing when you're really focusing on growing towards the future. We have had, you know, it used to be their merchandisers really didn't work with indie authors or work with aggregators selling indie. And they've changed that. And we found their merchandising is very, very powerful. You know, I think because their readership was so used to having that kind of curated space in a Barnes & Noble where it's like the staff picks. They like that. And so we've had several Nook Daily deals hit first in the US store. Our Free Fridays, like when we get books in the Free Fridays, anywhere between 10 and 25,000 downloads. And we see really, really good buy-through rate to the rest of the series if it's part of a series. So, I think we're going to see Nook continue to evolve, and I hope that they're still around because they're such a great player, but you just never know. I mean, the whole industry is changing so rapidly.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you kind of expect, because of course Kobo is owned by a Japanese company, Rakuten, and you know, but part of me thinks it will come out of left field next. I mean, it won't be Google, it will be, you know, Facebook, or it'll be, you know, Alibaba, or it'll be, you know, something something that will challenge. It has to be a big player. That's what's interesting, I think, because of all these smaller players, they can probably dominate. Like the Tolino dominates in Germany. Do they dominate in Switzerland and, you know, Austria, for example, other German-speaking territories?
I think they do, but I'm not positive about that.
But they're not gonna take over the rest of the world. So the question is, to me, it's really, are we gonna see these big, you know, companies that will take over lots, or will we see a breakdown into companies, you know, country specific leaders?
You know, I don't know, and it'll be interesting to see as social media changes and the rise of messaging apps. Didn't you do something on Viber with Kobo?
Yeah,
or
I did.
Is that coming up?
Yeah.
You know, that's really interesting to me. And like WeChat is such a huge thing in parts of the world. Who knows how it's going to affect the book publishing industry? I think that's the great thing about being an indie author is you have the chance to be nimble and to experiment and try new things. And we see the traditional publishing is just kind of learning from what indie authors are succeeding at.
Exactly. And, you know, what I like with what you're doing is like with the 24 symbols thing, it was, you know, do you want to opt in all your books? And it's like, well, why not? You know, I always exactly. just feel like, well, I'm not losing anything. And if I don't have to spend any more time on it, then why wouldn't I? But I think the question that many authors have, and I mean, I do around some of these, you know, I have good traction at Kobo and decent traction at iBooks, but like my Nook sales are terrible. but, you know, what are you seeing amongst the top selling authors on these other platforms other than Amazon? How are people getting traction and making some decent money?
I think part of it is just making sure you're talking about the other platforms. I see a lot of authors that don't, like their personal website just has Amazon links. All of their social media is links to their Amazon, like their author profile on Amazon. Some of it's a matter of time, you know, in general, it's going to take more than 6 months to really take off because it's effectively like starting over as an author because that readership hasn't heard of you. And with any kind of branding, seeing your name over and over is going to make them more comfortable with it to the point they're going to buy. You know, we've done a lot of work with merchandising we're trying to help authors get that traction wherever we can. And so I tell people, if you're like a brand new author, write in series at first. You're just going to make it so much easier on yourself. You know, try to get to the point where you've got 3 books out because there's a ton of readers that won't buy until you have about 3 books out. And then go free first in series with the first one. That will help tremendously. And, you know, all the authors I see doing that are selling so many more books than the people who aren't. We ran our numbers and like series with a free first in series, we're selling, you know, did 3 times as much revenue as series that did not. We're seeing our most successful authors are all using like no asset pre-orders. So they're setting up pre-orders, you know, way in advance so that when a reader finishes their book, there's already another one in line for them to buy. And so right at the moment where they're the most fond of you, you can take advantage of that because, you know, discoverability is a huge issue, but it's not just finding new readers. It's maintaining the readers that you've already got because there's so many things competing for their time and attention. So we're big fans. You know, we do no asset pre-orders at iBooks, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, and Tolino now. So.
Oh, okay. So Tolino as well.
Yes.
No, it's really interesting. And it's funny that I still, and I totally get, because Mark said the same thing, and I really get the pre-order thing, but part of me really struggles with committing to that date. But with with Apple, you can change the date, can't you?
Yeah, with all of our distributors, they do not mind
pushing the date out a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, you can go forward or back. You have to give them about 10 days to review and process the content. But none of them mind, like if you say you set a release date for December 20th, you can push it back to January 20th. If you keep doing that after a while, readers will complain.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, it's something, it's not punitive. You know, I know Amazon, if you miss a release date, they don't allow you to do it again for a while. None of the other vendors feel that way.
Yeah, so I wanted just to come back on the, you know, technical question on the some of your cool features. So you've got this automatic back matter, which actually sounds amazing, as in you generate this back matter. So when people have a new book, they can just add it in and you add it into every other book, which is just fantastic, because once you have a number of books, it is a pain in the ass to update everything. So you have that. And then you have this new email list for authors. So I wanted to ask about that, because everyone, the questions people are emailing me about your feature is, if the author later on decides that they want their own email list, can they export those readers, or is it just held within Drafter Digital?
Right now it's held within. We are looking at expanding that out. Like, we would like to make it much more robust. You know, we're trying to figure out the legal part of it, because there's a certain number of legal constraints, and they vary internationally. But we think we can do something like what MailChimp and AWeber do to allow you to move on to another service. So we are working on that. You know, right now we kind of made it where it's like Amazon subscribe to author feature, where it's just kind of a very basic, we let you know when a new book comes out. But we, you know, we do send out the email every time you release a new book under that author name. We would like to make it a much more robust platform to maybe be, you know, an email replacement for spending money on those companies. Because we see some authors that just use them for their free services, but then they're constantly having to prune that list to stay under 2,000 or 5,000. I'm not quite sure what the amount was. And we also see a lot of authors that just don't even do an email list. And so that was... it's such an important part, and just getting that part of letting people know in a new release, we thought would help sales tremendously. So we wanted to make sure to have that. You know, I was talking about Aaron Pogue, our COO. He's one of those authors that just because of time has never set up an email list, and so this was a great feature for him. And I'm surprised by the number of very successful authors that still don't have an email list. It adds another layer of anonymity for authors too, that write steamier romance and don't necessarily want their friends and family knowing, because every email list has to be tied to a physical address, and so now it goes to our corporate address, and so we have people who use us for that reason.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I have two brands that are kind of public, but you know, there are some things that I think about doing, and I actually have some friends of mine who've published and haven't wanted an email list because of that reason. Like, you know, they don't actually want to interact with readers either. So if there's just a way to push notification, that's actually brilliant. And there are, of course, authors who may only have one or two books and publish slower, and like you say, the monthly amount of money that you would pay to keep the email list might not make it worth it. So I think that's a great feature. Are there any other cool features that you've got at the moment?
You know, I think we're going to keep building out those. You know, the InMatter stuff has been huge, and making it a single button to update. And we send those store tailored links. So if someone buys your book at Barnes & Noble, they're going to have a list at the back of the book with Barnes & Noble links. We think that will be huge. And for the most part, we're seeing a lot of people opt into that.
So if we already have books, so like I've got, you know, books going through you, do I republish the EPUB without the back matter so that you can add the back matter?
Right. You would take it out of your version and then click on the little option that we have for us to generate your also by page. And then it would go kind of into the whole system where we would handle all of that for you.
Yeah, because that's so cool. Because when I rebranded earlier this year, a couple of titles, it's just been a nightmare, and I still haven't updated everything. And of course, you know, I've got Risen Gods coming out next week, and now I have to go all of those books that I have to update. And of course, the more and more books you write, the worse this problem becomes. And I know some listeners will be like, well, I'm only writing my first book. But a lot of these problems come when you're, I guess, more mature in the market. So it's very cool. And it's great that you're, you know, you're trying to fix the problems that we have. Of course, another problem we have is the getting free books to advanced readers.
Right.
Any chance you're working on that?
We are. We've been working on that one a long time. Like, there's a couple of different ways we talked about doing it. And so I don't have details to offer yet, but we would love to do it because that's a huge feature.
Yeah. And what about direct sales? That would be the other one.
We've talked about that too. We kind of feel with direct sales that with the way the market is right now, you might be hurting yourself at the retailers by going with direct sales. But we see that, you know, that might change. And, you know, a lot of different services are out there that are making it easier and easier to sell with the European VAT tax.
Yeah.
But a lot of these services are taking care of that for you too. So. Yeah.
And of course, we must say now, it's not just the European VAT tax. All the other countries saw how good it was and everyone is adopting it, right? Japan, Australia. And there's a whole load of them just going, oh yeah, we could take that money as well.
Exactly.
So yeah, the Europeans started it, but now it's everywhere. And I agree with you. The direct sales is one of those things. I think people are considering that as a financial extra, but also a protection extra. Yes. And also, there are interestingly some readers who are protesting against some of these bigger platforms and want to buy direct from the author. Small percentage, but it's quite interesting. I've had those emails. It's like, I don't want to give my money to XX big company.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Anyway, that's quite interesting. So what other questions did I have for you? Oh, I wanted to ask about genres, because you mentioned like in Australia, the US romance, for example, sells really well. I mean, we all know that romance represents a big part of the market. But are you seeing any other particular things? So like 24 Symbols, for example, you know, are you seeing within different countries, are there different preferences?
You know, I would say with the German market, we sell a lot more romance too. Mm. The UK market, the romance doesn't do very, like US romance doesn't tend to do as well at. Mysteries and thrillers have been pretty consistently the second for us in the different markets. Sci-fi seems to be fairly universal. Like it's always pretty high on our list of outliers. You know, there are things that don't go well, like certain types of historical romance. You know, like if it's set in England, then it does well in the UK. But if it's like a Civil War historical romance, doesn't do very well anywhere else outside the US. And, you know, I imagine there's a lot of international content that's the same way, where it's just a little bit too specific to one market.
Actually, I have another point on this. I think that... the other thing I want is different covers per country.
Yes. Now we want that too. And it, none of the retailers make it easy without making it an entirely different book. And so you lose all of your reviews.
Yes.
No, that would be huge because there are differences. The UK market favors more conservative covers than the US
market.
That's
why the US romance doesn't sell. It's because the covers are so American.
Yes. Yes.
But
it's like we're putting like the flag and like eagles all over something almost, because it just screams to UK readers, this isn't for me. And so we would love to be able to do that.
Yeah. And I think even if I was traveling in India and Asia, they use a lot brighter colors in Asia on covers than they do in Britain. In Britain, we're quite muted, you know, in terms
kind of pastels, right?
Yeah.
Kind of
arty.
What I would call like a cozy mystery type cover is working on different genres there.
Yes, whereas you go to, you know, India and it's got to be bright. It's got to stand out. So I really want those different covers. In fact, I would probably use different covers in America and the UK. You know, I think it would make a big difference. So I'm glad you're on that too, because obviously publishers do this right now because they publish in territories and they always have a different cover, don't they? Always.
They do, but a lot of times it's, you know, they're selling the rights to another publisher that is from that market. Yeah. And so that publisher is taking what they know about that market. that's what I'm excited about to see for the future is authors talking more about those other markets and saying, this is what works in England, like really thinking about it. We've seen BookBub expand into the UK, Canada, India just recently. When people really start thinking about, I think a lot of authors just think about their US sales.
Well, that's and where so, most people make their money. So they're like, why should I worry about my $10 in, you know, in all the other stores? But just a question on pricing, because I always advise people to price locally, but many people find it very confusing. So, and of course, at Drafter Digital, you get the choice. What are your recommendations around?
Well, I've joined Mark Lefebvre in preaching, set your territorial prices everywhere you can. You want to have a price that ends in 49 or 99 for most currencies, because the psychology of it is just so powerful. Like, it really does help sell more books. And if you have something that comes up to be like a weird price, like, you know, £262, like that's weird to people. It's off-putting, and so they don't buy things. So we allow the territorial pricing. Kobo makes it easy. Amazon makes it easy. iBooks makes it easy. So we tell people to set territorial prices. We've talked about maybe making that easier and like letting people opt in to for us to round up or down depending on the market to one of those nicer prices. iBooks already does this with
their tiers.
They have the tiers, so they kind of force you into it, and sometimes people don't even notice. We've thought about doing that. But we've also made it really, really easy for authors to make sure that their pricing matches up with their Amazon pricing, so they don't get the emails from Amazon.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? There's all these little things you have to do. But no, I'm always preaching that too. But, and also, it's not that hard. I mean, I would like that button that says, yes, we will round it up or down, whatever is the closest. But if people do it, I mean, if you type in $4.99 US, you default what the exact exchange rate is, and then all you have to do is go in and change a few digits. So I don't want people to be scared thinking that they have to come up with a number, because they don't, do they? They will see the number. Maybe it says like $4.99 US dollars might come up as £3.48, and you just round that up to like, well, in fact, and the other thing in Britain, for example, is don't do a £3.48, you would make that a £2.99. You would actually round that one down, because people here won't pay £3.99.
I would most love to do, like, is give a suggested price, like looking at the bestsellers in your genre and maybe looking at your also bots, show people a price that we would suggest for that currency. Because, you know, there are some currencies like Mexican currency. Yeah. It's very different numbers. The yen is a very different, like, who knows that they're setting the right price. And so I would like to be able to suggest those prices to people.
Yeah.
And for markets like the UK, where pricing is more competitive, to recommend a lower price.
And then Australia, for example, you can price
for a higher price. Yeah. Exactly. I think that'd be awesome. And that's something, I keep pushing for, and our developers just look at me and kind of groan because I've got so many ideas.
That really is a good one. And I know what you mean. Like, I have some idea because I've traveled in a lot of these places, and like India, for example, you can get a pristine paperback for like 120 rupees. Right. So, I mean, who's going to pay 190 rupees for an ebook? So this is the thing. It does become quite difficult, even with the exchange rate. You don't want to pay the exact exchange rate in some of these countries. So be interesting. I'd love that. That sounds like a great tool. So
We've seen Amazon do that with their move into India with KU. They're not charging the same thing that they're charging in Western countries. And so it's just knowing the market, and there's so many markets to know now. We as a company have to help authors do that better.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Right. Well, you've been great telling us loads of things, and we're excited about this, aren't we? Lots of things to get excited about. But do you see anything else coming in the next year? Like, what should indies be looking for or excited about or focusing on apart from the international sales stuff?
It's kind of tied in, but the global word that we keep throwing out, global, global and mobile. I think that'll just continue, and that is international sales. I think people are going to start talking more about discoverability and like how to tackle that. Because there are more and more books being published, and there are a lot of people that just want to slow things down, and it's never going to slow down. So it's a matter of how do we make ourselves more discoverable? How do we get our metadata right? I think we're going to see a lot more authors talking about that and conferences focusing on that.
Yeah, that's great. And of course, I talked about that with Thad McElroy about the fact that the metadata is the blooming book. You know,
it is.
Yep. And if we had better AI around emotional resonance in books, fiction, I mean, nonfiction is easy, but around fiction, if we understood more about the metadata of the actual language in the whole book, there should be a smart way of doing metadata. I shouldn't have to come up with 7 keywords.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And, you know, so much discoverability is driven by just sales patterns. You know, like also bots are only driven by what a lot of readers buy that they also bought with this book. You know, we've got all this technology, you know, Google's working on their machine learning. We're getting closer and closer to being able to recommend things, you know, what's selling and what's not selling, you know, bestseller list. You know, Kobo released their list of some of the data they had for different countries, and it was shocking. Some of the biggest hits last year were, you know, read to completion by very, very few people that bought them. I would love to see more things like natural language processing to tell you, like, these books are very similar. And, you know, there are companies that are working on that and tackling that. So I think we're going to get better and better search recommendation. You know, Netflix is doing that at the video level and constantly improving their algorithms. I'd be shocked if the other companies like Apple and Amazon weren't doing something similar. So,
And I think that should be encouraging to people. Like, actually, technology, as we've seen in the last 5 years, technology has enabled, you know, authors like me and many others to make a living. And in the next 5 years, we're going to see all this explosion with technology that will help us even more. I mean, yes, it will always be competitive, but, you know, as long as you're taking, you know, not being scared of it. I think that's the thing too, isn't it? You've got to jump in and give it a go and just see what happens.
Exactly. You know, 2 or 3 years ago, I think most authors just saw Facebook as not a very good way to advertise. But now authors are starting to realize how powerful it can be. You know, Mark Dawson's course has taught a lot of authors like the way in which to use Facebook. And that just experimenting with new things. You know, people are starting to experiment with Wattpad to help them find new readers and younger audiences. Being open to change and trying different things. And the thing, you know, when you find something you like to do, focus in on that rather than, you know, don't try to be everywhere because there's way too many platforms out there. But try to find the platforms where your target reader is, and you know, you're probably going to like it because those are the people that are getting excited about you.
Yeah. So. Fantastic. Well, where can people find Drafter Digital online?
So you can find our website is www.draft2digital.com. We have the same, our Twitter is @DraftToDigital. You can find me, and I mostly tweet about industry-related news @DanWoodOK.
Brilliant. So. Well, thanks so much for your time, Dan. That was great.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I've listened to your show for a very long time. I've learned so much from it. So thanks for, I think you provide a great service to authors.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me @thecreativepen or find me on Facebook @thecreativepen. See you next time.